Hey, this is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 132 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. In this episode, I'm excited to bring you Wyatt Dixon from Picnic Durham in Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina. I've been trying to connect with him for a long time, and this is so great. It's so interesting. At the beginning, we jump into my discussion with him about Blackbeard and his connection to North Carolina, and then his connection to their logo. It's really cool, but it does start off with us talking about that. Then we get into his background and how his parents were involved with politics and pig pickings, and how he got a passion for barbecue and that style of barbecue, and how he went to school, law school, and was doing these whole hogs on the side, and how he transitioned from that to wanting to open a restaurant. And it gets really heady, and we talk about some pretty dark times for him and how he got through it. And the whole interview itself is very cerebral, and we talk about what barbecue means to him and what the concept of barbecue is in general, and what he is trying to bring with his restaurant, and how his connection with Green Button Farms and the hogs that they have. And it's extremely interesting. I know you're going to love it. I know you're going to want to visit him. And also, what an interesting thing is his description of the pits that they use. They built these custom pits for whole hogs, but they're for indoor for a restaurant. They're created by Melvin Barbecue Grills, and it just sounds and so interesting and so amazing. But thank you, Wyatt, for taking the time. I know you guys are going to dig this one so much. And as always, I'm excited to have the Smoke Sheet on board as the sponsor for this podcast. The Smoke Sheet is a barbecue newsletter, a weekly barbecue newsletter that comes into your email box on Wednesday morning that is chock full of tons of information. I just interviewed both Sean Ludwig and Ryan Cooper, who are NYC barbecue tourist, respectively. I interviewed them just to learn more about what their barbecue background is and what they're trying to bring to the table with this combined effort that they're doing. It's such a great resource, and it's definitely something you'll read. There's barbecue news, which is completely up to date. There's information on barbecue festivals across the United States, so that way you can plan ahead. There's links to the latest YouTube stuff that's going on with barbecue, the latest podcast stuff that's going on with barbecue. Everything is up to date. And if you go to the website at bbqnewsletter.com, they have an archive of all the editions. So that way you can go back and get additional information. It's such a great resource. Oh, and they also have a recipe of the week, which is an awesome recipe. It's a barbecue recipe that you'll definitely want to use. The smoke sheet can be found at bbqnewsletter.com. That's bbqnewsletter.com. The smoke sheet is barbecue news worth consuming. And if you're digging these, you got to subscribe. That way you don't miss out on any episode. I'm doing at least one or two of these per week, if not more. I have a website at kevinsbbqjoints.com with links to all my podcast stuff, all the YouTube stuff, additional barbecue joint tours, and that's tons and tons of stuff. So the website's worth checking out. And in the end, I definitely appreciate you guys taking the time to listen to this. It means a lot, and your feedback means a lot. So reach out to me, connect with me, and if there's anything that I'm missing on this, let me know. I want this to be an amazing resource for you guys. Thanks so much. Enjoy.
Blackbeard was like a North Carolina pirate, so it just kind of fits. It's the Eastern North Carolina barbecue sauce, and it looks cool.
It looks cool. Is that, I didn't realize, is that where he pillaged?
He did a fair amount of his pillaging. Actually, he didn't pillage too much in North Carolina because, sadly, in those days, there wasn't a whole hell of a lot to pillage. But he used North Carolina as, like, a home base. And in those days, Virginia and South Carolina were kind of, like, the big, important economic players, and North Carolina was a bit of a backwater. Okay. So there are debates about it, but he was harbored in North Carolina.
Interesting.
Physically and, you know, by the people, and then was killed. Eventually, the Virginia governor left his jurisdiction and came to North Carolina to capture, kill Blackbeard, and that's how he ended. So,
oh, that's interesting. That's I'm gonna try to keep that in this interview because that's interesting. People probably,
it's a cool little thing to talk about.
Yeah, and it also gives people an idea when they see your logo, they're like, okay, now it makes sense.
Yeah, it geographically locates it a little bit, and it gives us a little bit of a sort of a renegade kind of attitude that fits a little bit.
Yeah, let's go back into your history. Did you grow up in North Carolina?
I did. I'm from Fayetteville, North Carolina, which is southeastern North Carolina. Home of Fort Bragg and Pope Air Force Base, so it's a big military town. My family was not military. Both of my parents were in elected politics.
Oh, interesting.
And that's kind of been my exposure to barbecue, because in North Carolina, like many places in the South, politics and barbecue are inextricably linked. Mm-hmm. And that's whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, we're all eating. And a lot of the, almost all of the barbecue or all the fundraisers I got dragged to had a barbecue element. And it was usually, it's all, well, here it's pig. And it was almost always like somebody with a smoker doing it. And Fayetteville also doesn't have like a flagship barbecue restaurant like a lot of other towns in North Carolina do.
Yeah, I was trying to think in my head which
would so be. There's not one, and I didn't. It's probably like I was probably 10 or 12 before I understood that for a lot of people barbecue was something that you got in a restaurant. Because to me, it was always at a pig picking. And that is still the case in the way I feel, like not to take anything away from what I'm doing in my own restaurant or what other people are doing in theirs. But I believe that like the spiritual home of barbecue is not in a restaurant. It's in a dove field or at a church picnic or a political fundraiser or a family reunion. But it's the community doing it versus it being done commercially. I think that's where at least like pig pick and North Carolina barbecue, that's where it's from. And that's what gets me excited, really.
Do you do attend those types of things anymore, or do you end up, or do you actually have any yourselves as like as a restaurant? Would that be something that someday you'd like to do? Or
it's no, I don't. I would like to. That's an interesting question. I think I would love to be able to get successful enough to have enough restaurants to kind of, you know, run themselves. And then if I could do that and not charge money for it, that would be awesome.
To give people that experience. That.
Right. And because if I'm getting paid for it, that's going to take something away.
It's the opposite of what that is.
I would love to be able to like retire from barbecue and make it a hobby again. That would be cool as hell. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be awesome. But probably a long way from that.
Well, maybe as you're getting closer. You never know. Yeah, but now, so then, if you grew up doing that, what steered you towards being a restaurateur and doing the restaurant?
I've always liked and been interested in restaurants. I think just they're fun. There can be, and I found that interesting. I did not start out on the barbecue track or the restaurant track. After college, I lived up in New York for a few years with a lot of my friends moved up there, and didn't really cook barbecue. I started in college like cooking pigs for my fraternity, but it was a casual thing. I never envisioned it as like a career.
What were you cooking on?
I got a pig cooker for my 21st birthday, and it was a gas cooker. At that point, I was cooking on gas. I moved back to Chapel Hill, so I went to undergrad at UNC Carolina, and then came back in 2008 and started law school. And while I was in law school and back in Chapel Hill, I guess I was a little more, let's just say enlightened, but I don't know that that's the right word, but cued into the like local food scene. And I cooked my first, what I now call like a real pig, a pig that was from a local farm that was hormone free, antibiotic free, you know, lives outside and had an awesome life, kind of, you know, the polar opposite of the lives that unfortunately 99% of the pigs we encounter,
yeah, the factory farms and
factory farms. And, you know, like it's, I don't want to go down that road, but what I found after I cooked this pig, it really was like a light switch moment for me that it was so much better than anything I'd ever cooked before. And I knew that I hadn't had a stroke of genius in the middle of the night and done something great. I knew that I was working with a superior product. And at that point this was still a hobby, but being the guy that people know who can cook he'll cook a pig for you on the weekend. Like that takes up almost my whole weekend.
Oh yeah.
And I decided like right then that, you know, hell, if I'm gonna do this, I'm never cooking another factory pig again. Because now that I know that this other pig is available and now I know how great the product can be, why would I waste all my whole weekend cooking something that's now second rate?
Yeah, exactly.
So I just made a decision right then that I'd never cook another factory pig, and I've stuck to that. I'm really proud of it. And that first pig also turned out to sort of be my big break. One of the people who was at that event was a pastry chef at Lantern, which is a really nice restaurant in Chapel Hill.
Okay.
And the chef there, Andrea Rusing, had, this was probably like 2010, had just won her James Beard Award. Like, she was, wow, a few weeks off of her Beard Award, and I get a call out of the blue from her. I didn't know that she knew me from Adam. And she said, I hear you're the guy to call to cook a pig in Chapel Hill. Will you cook a pig for Lantern's 10th anniversary? I'll provide the pig. I was like, absolutely, yes, ma'am. You know, I think I hung up the phone and crapped my pants.
Well, that's so interesting, too, that would even happen.
Yeah, it really is. It's kind of like being in the right place in the right time and being with the right people. And that pig turned out to be like one of the best I've ever cooked, I think, probably because I obsessed over it more than I've obsessed over any pig ever. I know I didn't sleep that night. But she said, and she's a very like matter of fact woman, and I told her that I was kind of, not that I wasn't enjoying law school, but I was not sure what the future was going to bring and what I wanted my practice of law to eventually look like. And I talked to her about this, and she said, well, look, you're an idiot if you don't do this. If you're not digging the law, you're an idiot if you don't do this because you're good at it, and this is something that people really want. And, you know, I've had other people say, yeah, you should open a restaurant, but they're just...
But they're friends, yeah, or yeah, family, or...
Maybe they're being nice, but this was not a normal person. This was like a super person in the food world telling me, like, you need to do this. And that was kind of what planted the seed for that idea that maybe, well, if she's saying it's okay, maybe I can think about how I could turn this into a life, because it's...
How did you go from that to, did you end up having like a pop-up thing or catering, or
I sort of started this little catering company, and this was the logo, like I called it Pig Whistle, and this was the logo. And it just sort of grew like organically. So at this point I'm in law school, I'm newly married. I got married when I started law school. It's just not a good time to do that. My mom is 2010, so my mom's a Democrat, so she's going through this awful election that she eventually loses in that sort of Republican backlash of 2010. So that's very stressful. My dad, who is a district court judge, and he's been a judge and a prosecutor his whole life, so in the law, is struggling with mental health and alcoholism. And I'm... You know, all of this is in my head. I'm starting to struggle with depression too, because I'm in law school. I'm doing something I'm not loving, and there's, you know, lots of stuff
stacked up.
But ultimately, I decided that the odds of my becoming a well-adjusted adult were better cooking barbecue than they were practicing law in whatever form that took. And that was kind of a ballsy move. And, you know, having spent 3 years in law school and taking the bar exam, that was tough.
So were you close to practicing law? Like, did you pass the bar and get
that? I didn't pass the bar. I took it a couple of times. But at the same time I was doing that, I was also getting this catering thing going. And that's really where my head was. Yeah. And if you... Turns out, if you don't have your head in the game, you're probably not going to pass the bar exam.
Oh, no. Yeah, even people with their head in the game don't pass the bar exam.
Right. Yeah. Right. So that became a thing. It didn't become a thing. It just became it was hard. That was not an easy time of life, and making that transition was tough. You know, it also involved, like, my marriage ended, which so that turned out to be a great thing too. But those aren't easy transitions.
But also during that time, I'm sure it was pretty dark, where you probably didn't see this where you're right now today.
This was hard to see. Yeah, definitely hard. Like, where I am now it was tough to see what that would look like from that spot, and it was kind of a roll of the dice. But I don't know. It wasn't as risky as maybe it looks on paper. I don't know if that makes any sense, but I knew I could do it. I knew, like, this is a hard business, but it's not impossible. And running, you know, there's a lot of idiots running restaurants, and I kind of, you know, just at the end of the day, well, if they're that dumb and they can do it, I'm sure I can handle it too.
Yeah, I kind of feel that way sometimes. You're like, and we're all kind of stupid in our own way. So it's
right. Right. And we're all kind of like hacking our way through the brush here. Yeah,
even the most successful.
You got to give yourself a little credit sometimes.
Yeah. And then, and it does. Like, the hard work does pay off, or mostly pays off. It's hard, too, because, like, I hate when people say, like, if you work hard, you're going to be successful. It doesn't always happen. But
no, not always.
No. But generally, that's a good recipe for that.
Right. Well, I know you're probably not going to be successful if you don't work
true,
hard.
True. There you go. That's what it is.
One thing I can almost certainly tell you, and definitely in this business, you're not going to, if you don't work hard, you're not going to make it.
So then from catering, how did you get into the restaurant world? I know that, I think, did you end up hooking up with a restaurant? Is that how?
I did. Well, not an existing restaurant, but I had, after I cooked that first real pig, I sort of started cooking pigs from all sorts of different local farms and figuring out what was out there, the diversity and the breeds and just learning. And I met the guy who's now one of my partners at Picnic, who's my pig farmer, Ryan Butler. He has a farm called Green Button. It's actually like 10 minutes north of our restaurant.
How perfect is that?
And all our pigs come from Green Button. So I have custody of these pigs basically from the time they arrive on the farm as feeder pigs, or they're born on the farm, to the time you eat them. I've got them, and I'm really proud of that. It's what makes my barbecue. So Ryan is one partner, and my other partner Ben is actually a fraternity brother from Carolina who lived in New York with me, and we actually kind of became better friends up there around food and music. And he was in Durham running another like higher end restaurant. He has a chef background, worked for Sean Brock in Charleston, where he's from. And he's a very accomplished chef and very good at what he does. And we sort of tossed around this idea of doing a barbecue restaurant together. And I knew that I was only going to cook these real pigs. And then if I did that, I was going to have a special kind of relationship with my pig farmer. And then once we found this spot and realized how close it was to the farm, and it just made sense for Ryan to be a partner in the restaurant too. And I'm really glad I did. One, he's one of my best friends. Two, I think that being, the analogy I used is lashed to the mast to get through the storm, helps. Like being tied together in a partnership to go through opening a restaurant, which none of us had done before. It just, you know, keeps you from abandoning ship and you're even considering it
to get to where, that's another, it goes back to your logo. That's so interesting.
Right. So it's been a really cool story. And having this relationship with the farm is something I'm really proud of. And I think what really got me hooked on the idea of being able to do a restaurant and kind of bring North Carolina barbecue to the people is the difference between what I do with these awesome pigs and kind of what is commercial North Carolina barbecue using the lesser hogs. I I felt like I had this opportunity to show people what barbecue really can be. And the best compliment I ever get, or at least the one that's the most meaningful to me and is kind of the fuel for why I do it, because you can't work as hard as you do in this business just for the money, because it's not enough. There has to be something else that's like tangible and fulfilling. And for me, that's like hearing from really old people, like little old ladies who come up and whisper, you know, I haven't tasted this since I was a child. That's powerful.
That's like, huge. Yeah.
You just transported a woman back in time 60 mm-hmm. years. That's cool. And if I can do that and then pass that to another generation, that's really awesome. That's something that's substantial. That's more than making money. And it's being, and this is something I don't think I understood before we opened the restaurant and kind of got into it. But if you hold yourself out there as this, and then you have other people, you know, interviewing you and as a celebrity, or not a celebrity, but as an expert or a...
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, it's...
Yeah, I feel that I'm also like a steward of the institution of North Carolina barbecue. And that's like a pretty somber responsibility mm-hmm. because it's part of our cultural identity and near and dear to so many people.
Well, that's great too. I think for people that watch this or listen to this, to hear that coming from you, I think that's important that people hear that, because it does mean a lot to a lot of people. And
yeah, it does.
Like to many people, like yeah, all ages.
And one thing too that's important, and I know, I think the coolest thing about barbecue, like big barbecue, is that word means different things to different people depending on where you're standing. Mm-hmm. And the area I'm in, the North Carolina Triangle, Raleigh, Durham, mm-hmm. Chapel Hill, is like growing at an exponential pace. And I guess there's a saying, you know, there are a lot of people who ain't from here, and there's nothing wrong with that, but it makes me feel like educating the new folks mm-hmm. and showing you this is what North Carolina barbecue is. And when we talk about North Carolina barbecue, it is pulled pork, whole hog. We can debate about that, but it's definitely not brisket, and it's mm-hmm. definitely not ribs. And no, I'm not putting those down, but at its core,
it's not. Yeah,
it's not a part of North Carolina barbecue, and I don't want you to come eat brisket at my restaurant and walk out thinking you had North Carolina barbecue, because you didn't. You just had Texas barbecue in North Carolina.
Exactly.
And from somebody who, you know, that's, I won't say I'm bad at it, but it's not my, the gospel I preach is North Carolina whole hog, and that's what I really care about.
And it's interesting that you're doing whole hog at the time when you, what year did you open?
2016.
Did you ever think I'm going to do shoulders or do, because that's...
No, I always grew up thinking that barbecue was whole hog and that pulling was the way to do it. I don't chop. I know some people chop.
Yeah, I was going to talk about that.
I don't take a knife to my pigs once they go in the smoker, they're not going to get hit with a knife. It's going to be hands from there on out. And this isn't to disparage anybody else's barbecue, but because of the way my pigs, their genetics and the way they grow and their life, the quality of fat is better and it's distributed much better throughout the meat. So my pigs, I think, break down in a way that some lesser pigs will not.
Okay.
Which I think is what's happened to pork in the last 30 or 40 years has decreased the quality of North Carolina barbecue, because, like, if you ever have it, you get it. It's kind of dry but greasy at the mm-hmm. same time. It's like dry stuff sitting in a pool of grease. That's because that fat was never intermarbled in the meat to begin with. So it just cooks off to the side where mine melts in. So I have this theory that as the pigs got worse, the prevalence of chopping increased because their shit just wouldn't pull. And so you got to
have that. Is it interesting.
That's, I don't know. There's no way to.
Chopping it perhaps could help it commingle better.
Tenderizes it, yeah. And it also, it helps your margin. Because if you're chopping up a bunch of stuff that I'm going through by hand and pulling out. Because I want every bite to be like a perfect bite of barbecue. I don't want you to get a blood vessel or a piece of membrane or something. It should be clean. So having really clean barbecue is something that I pride myself on too.
Wow, that's excellent. So how long does it take to cook these whole hogs? Like, what are you looking at? And how many, are you a restaurant that sells out too?
Sometimes we sell out, but I try to cook enough to have a little bit more than we need for every day. But it can be tricky, and in the beginning it was a lot harder than it is now. Make the decision to do whole hog, though, it's a lot easier to cook shoulders.
Oh, yeah.
And you get better yield, but I think you get better barbecue with whole hog when you're mixing everything together. But there aren't great, like, commercial smokers for doing whole hog. It's kind of, there's not much out there. And the open pit method, one, the health department really won't let you do it anymore. Like, stuff's grandfathered in, but mm-hmm. building a new restaurant around those pits would be difficult. Two, from a business standpoint, like, there's a reason that a lot of the old-time whole hog places are closing, and it's because it's a brutal way of life and a terrible business plan. So I knew I was going to have to do it a little bit differently, but still I'm not willing. There's certain things I'm just not willing to compromise mm-hmm. on. I was only going to use wood and charcoal. I'm not going to use gas or electricity. So I worked with this guy, Melvin, who runs BQ Grills. He builds smokers for Sam Jones. And mostly what he builds are like pig cookers, like pits. But what I went to him and asked was, he builds this cabinet deal that you've probably seen one that's similar, a double-walled mm-hmm. cabinet smoker. I basically went to him and was like, Melvin, I'd like you to, like to basically blow it out for whole hog. So make a giant version of this thing that looks like, it's like the size of like a 2 Sub-Zero refrigerator.
Yeah.
The bigger one weighs 2,800 pounds, and it's got a meat box at the top that has 3 like 60 inch racks. And get either half of a big hog or a whole smaller one on each rack.
Wow.
And then that box is actually separated by or half plate steel from the smoke box or the fuel box that's underneath it. And there's little chutes that go up. But basically the idea is to separate the smoke and the heat from the grease. So the grease gets channeled out.
Oh yeah, that's an issue. Yeah,
down on my coals. So, like, I'm not saying I can't catch it on fire, but I'm not dripping grease right onto my coals that is gonna force me to have someone there all the time to manage it and make sure it's not catching on fire. So, what this does is allows me to, I can cook through the night without having somebody at the shop. I can go a really long time on a very small amount of fuel of wood and charcoal mixture.
That's great.
That's basically taking advantage, of advances in welding technology and to build pretty high tech smokers.
It's so custom, so crazy.
They're super custom. There's none like them in the country or in the world, I guess. And it was a leap of faith. It was Melvin. Who built these things he's definitely a good old boy from Eastern North Carolina, runs the shop with his brother-in-law. I remember going in there and, talking about what I wanted, and he sat back and smiled and said, well, Wyatt, to tell you the truth, we've been thinking about doing something like that, but we were waiting for somebody dumb enough to come along, pay for it first.
That's
I'll have to, please.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, and I came along. He knew I would. You know, it's the right combination of stupid and money. You can do all kinds of things.
And were you scared the first time you guys fired that up? Or I guess you tested it probably at his shop, right?
Yeah, we tested it a little bit at his shop, and no, I wasn't scared, not at all. I mean, it's so impressive and well built. Like,
yeah, I guess if you have someone that's building these, yeah,
what can happen? And it's gonna, like, these guys know enough about cooking barbecue and building smoker. I don't know the term I use for it. I know this is not a term, but smoko-dynamics. These fellas understand smoko-dynamics. They've forgotten more about it than I think I'll ever know. So I trust. It was a bit of a leap of faith designing a product that we weren't sure about, but this was like more of a handshake deal, and you know, Melvin was going to make sure I had what I needed, and we would tweak the design until we got it right. And they weren't cheap smokers, but I probably only have like material cost in them because Melvin's too proud of a man to charge you full freight unless it's perfect.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's just who you're dealing with. We were.
I want to see those. That's exciting. That's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. You should definitely come check them out. They're pretty cool. And if I, you know, after running them for almost 3 years now, I have ideas on how we can tweak them or make them a little bit better.
Well, so take us to a picnic. What can people expect when they visit? What are the hours? What's the capacity? How big?
We're an old gas station, like a 60 by 40 building. So I guess we've got about 50 seats in the restaurant. We've got a full bar, which is pretty nice. Cool.
Yeah, that's really cool.
That's unique for barbecue in North Carolina. Normally there's no alcohol.
No, I know.
that'd be sinful, you know. We're open 11 to 9 weekdays, open till 10 on the weekends. North Carolina Whole Hog is the gospel, but we've got great brisket and great ribs. We also have really good fried chicken. And I can't take any credit for it, other than picking the right partner. Ben came up with his fried chicken recipe and really studied on it and tweaked it. And I think we got the best chicken in town. I think it stands up to the best chicken you can come at me with. So that's, you can come and get like a barbecue and chicken combo be set. All of our sides are really good. We make everything from scratch. That was another big sort of tenet of our restaurant, is that we're a barbecue place, but we didn't want to be seen as like, and we're not like completely meat centric. And I wanted to be as accessible to, you know, people who aren't huge meat eaters. Mm-hmm. I want them to be as excited about, you know, the mac and cheese or the collards as their friend is about eating ribs.
That's important these days.
Giving yourself the meat sweats. Yeah, I mean, you want to be inclusive and have a little something for everybody. Or you know, you don't want a group who has a vegetarian in it to decide to not come to your restaurant because you don't offer something for that person.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's not like,
or a couple, like I was, my ex-wife was a vegetarian and made it a very difficult life, but it would be nice to go somewhere where I knew that she would love the food just as much as I did.
Right. Or wouldn't feel like she was a complete afterthought, either not thought of at all or was an afterthought. And that's not to say that like that's my passion, because it's not, but I think it's important, and it's also just good to focus, to not phone it in. And I think a lot of barbecue spots sometimes do great on the things that matter, like the barbecue, but then punt on the potato salad, or the beans just are dumped and heated, and We like to do a little bit more than that, and put as much into our sides as we do all the meat.
And you have hush puppies, right?
Yeah, we do have hush puppies. So, yeah, you can't open and not have hush
puppies. I know. That's like the first time I had hush puppies in my life were in North Carolina.
Yeah, people will let you have it. And if they don't think they're right, like, and ours weren't quite right at the beginning. And
that's funny.
People definitely let us have it. It's I always tell people that in North Carolina, to have a good barbecue restaurant, you only need five things. People will forgive you if your beans and your potato salad aren't great. The barbecue's got to be right. You got to have great coleslaw. You got to have banana pudding, good sweet tea, and great hush puppies. If you have those five things, you're probably going to make it.
I think so. Yeah. And sweet tea is different than, like, I think anybody's sweet tea. Like, in North Carolina, at least in my mind, it was like the first sip of sweet tea, I thought, oh, wow.
Sweet tea here is brown-tinted simple syrup.
Exactly.
That's basically what it is.
So I heard someone say, like, it makes your feelings hurt, or it makes you, like, it's...
It does. It's not healthy.
It's funny that it is, like, a nice balance. It does for the... It cuts savory.
It does.
For certain people. I don't drink a lot of sweet.
Yeah, but it's too sweet for my taste.
Same with me.
And it's also... Yeah, I mean, drinking tea that sweet and eating all this barbecue and fried chicken has not been great for the health of the people of North Carolina. And I'm definitely aware of that. And if you're sitting around people who have been drinking that for the last 30 years and seeing what they look like, it kind of makes you put your glass down.
That's so funny. So then what's you had talked about possibly, like, multiple locations. Do you foresee yourself, if you did open more locations?
I think the next one I'll do will probably be in this area. I'm working on that. It's still, you know, it's still not ready for the public yet, but that's in the pipe. And I'm excited about that because it's an opportunity to take everything I've learned in the last 3 years and, you know, get a second crack at it. Yeah. That'll be cool. Long term, who knows? I could see going out of state because, well, you know, just to put it bluntly, y'all come up here and go everywhere else slinging Texas barbecue. I think somebody ought to come down and start slinging in your neighborhood.
No, I agree. I agree. Definitely. No, that's a smart idea.
So, yeah, I could see going out of state, but it'd have to, you know, it has to be the right place. And I have to be great at doing it here and in North Carolina before I venture abroad, I think.
Overseas to Texas or South Carolina.
Before I go to foreign lands.
Essentially, yeah.
It's funny to say that. On my menu, in the barbecue section, I've got two different blocks, and the first one is like North Carolina whole hog barbecue, and then the one below it, I call it non-native barbecue. Because it's
true.
You know, not to run it down, but it's important for me that folks know, like, this is not of this place.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's good. I think that the day of just of a restaurant having a bunch of different things just to have them, like, you obviously, the things you bring on your menu are important to have, even if it's non-native. It's the brisket. Are you cooking? Do you have a specific, how are you smoking the brisket? You have another smoker in the restaurant, right, for that?
I've got another smoker that I use for brisket. It's smaller. It's still a stand-up cabinet type smoker.
But it makes sense for a restaurant, right?
It makes sense for a restaurant. If I were doing like more hardcore, I'd get John Lewis to build me one. I really like those smokers. Mm-hmm. They're awesome. That's what I'd get. But I don't cook brisket hard enough. Yeah, I'm not a Texas guy. I don't know if I got business riding around with something like that.
In your lane that you're in, you're doing an amazing job, and so it's also that's your soul.
Right. Yeah, and I do feel it's weird. Every time somebody orders brisket, I'm flattered and insulted.
That's awesome. That's great. You know, it's funny. I wanted to ask you specifically, when you go to a restaurant, like, say you go to a Texas style restaurant or a restaurant, and they have pulled pork. How do you feel? Do you feel like a lot of times that's an afterthought, or it's just to have pork on the menu?
I think it's probably just to have pork on the menu and punch all the little buttons on the barbecue card. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's like a symptom of the sort of whitewashing of and the genericization of barbecues, that as our society becomes mobile and a lot of these geographic lines get blurry, which is great, but I don't want anybody to, I don't want Texas to lose its barbecue tradition. Yeah. I don't want North Carolina to lose it. I don't want South Carolina to lose theirs, or Florida, or whatever thing.
Georgia or KC, yeah.
I want it to be, I think those little differences and nuances are what makes it so cool.
Mm-hmm. And I agree 100%.
Yeah, I know. Like, people who love barbecue, that's why they love it. And it's about people. At the end of the day, I think the thing that made me understand that the best is back in my early days of catering, I did a wedding reception, and the groom was from Korea, and his whole family was Korean and didn't speak any English. I remember when I cracked the lid on the pig cooker, maybe five or six little old Korean ladies sort of just came at me hard and pushed me out of the way. You know, I didn't understand what they were saying, but it was, get out of the way, big boy. And they took that pig and broke it down so fast, knew exactly what they were doing. And I think they were in a foreign land, and this was the first thing that they recognized.
Oh, that makes me so happy.
It was so cool, but it also made me understand that this thing that we do is not unique to us.
Mm-hmm.
The words we use and the sauce we put on it and some of the method differs, but the same basic thing is happening all over the world. It's a community who's, you know, killing, cooking, and consuming this animal together. Mm-hmm. That's what it's about. That's what a pig picking's about. That's what a luau is about. That's what,
like in Philippines, a lechon, like that.
Yes, it's the same damn thing. We're just calling it different mm-hmm. stuff, and it's always about community.
Always. Yeah, like yeah. I know I have Filipino friends because I live in Los Angeles, so it's a large Filipino community, and they'll have, for birthday parties, they'll have a lechon, like a small pig, but they'll right. say, and they'll say, arrive an half an hour early because it will be gone. It will
yeah,
be.
It will.
Yeah, there's piranhas there.
And the people there know how to do it, though. That's what,
yeah.
There's not like a guy who's having to educate people mm-hmm. on this, and that's something that I know has been lost since I was a child. Like, there aren't as many pig pickings as there were 25 years ago. And they're not, the people who are attending them aren't as comfortable pulling a pig
True.
Apart as, there's a lot more service and work that I need to do, or whoever's the pit master needs to do now, than he had to do in the past, because people just don't Yeah. get it the way they did. And we're disconnected from our food in unhealthy ways mm-hmm. just across the board. It's I call it not being able to connect the chicken to the nugget.
yeah. And it's amazing too, because right now is, in my mind, like a renaissance of food. Like the opportunity to eat amazing food is out there, but I still feel like people are disconnected in a way.
Right. I mean, people are very disconnected.
And a lot of times people just are so caught up in their life that they're eating fast food or just eating random, like just to get nourishment in the end. And right. That's what we need to kind of slow down.
That's what's there. It's mm-hmm. it's not that they're making a conscious decision to eat like a jackass. It's just it's what's there. And there's mm-hmm. other, so many things that are pulling them in different directions. And we've made it harder for ourselves to cook for our families and, you know, for each other, and shop for those things, and then we've lost a lot of the knowledge, sadly. Like, it's not passed on in the way it was
no
long ago, I guess.
And some, there's a lot of disconnected families broken up, families, and I think maybe some of those traditions don't get passed on. You guys are open Sunday, right?
We are open on Sunday. We're open 7 days a week.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of barbecue places traditionally closed on Sunday. I think that's nuts, because
you pay rent 7 days a week, right?
Yeah, a lot of people want to eat on Sundays. Yeah.
That was tough for me when I visited North Carolina. I'm like, everything was closed. And I'm like, oh, I'd arrive on Sunday morning and I would have nowhere to go.
Yeah, And I think, you know, if you're an old school barbecue restaurant, you probably should be closed on Sunday. But I'm not from that school. So the rules are a little different for me.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I've never held myself out as a, you know, 65-year-old white man. That's not who I am. I'm younger and slightly hipper. And I'm, you know, the restaurant and our business was going to reflect that.
Well, Wyatt, thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun, and it was like, I think it was very cerebral and very, like, I think I understand where you're coming from more and also what your restaurant symbolizes to it.
Awesome.
And I would hope that people that watch this and listen to this get that, and I can't wait to visit. I'm really excited.
I'm excited about it too, man. This has been fun.
Yeah, I'm glad we did it. We're definitely tenacious, aren't we?
Yeah, well, we could keep emailing. I feel like, you know, I don't want to go cold turkey on that. We've been emailing so long. We'll wind it down comfortably.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, man. I enjoyed it. Thanks a ton.
All right, take it easy. I appreciate it. Have a great one. All right, bye.